morning, everyone. And Happy New Year. Today's the first Sunday of Advent, and we begin a new liturgical cycle. And the liturgical cycle is also very much connected to the natural cycle of what we experience in the seasons. As we all know, our days are much shorter now, right? At times it can be kind of depressing. It's like 4 o'clock and it looks like it's 10, right? But we know that the liturgical season kind of reflects our awakening to the light of the world coming into our midst. So at Christmas, our days are the shortest and our days are the longest as we continue through this liturgical season and arrive at Pentecost, where the fullness of who God is revealed to us. So today, as this first Sunday of Advent, we sit in darkness, if you will, but with this great sense of anticipation, knowing that as we look upon around us in our world and how the light will continually get stronger and brighter and longer, so too our journey with the Lord becomes stronger and brighter and more enlightening, if you will. I have to say, this week I had two fun things that happened to me. They were kind of, I guess, related to the season, definitely. First off, when I get ready in the morning, I often put on KDFC, which is the classical music station here in San Francisco area. And I have it on my phone, so I use an app. But they announced that they have like another channel that is going to be the Holiday Spirit channel. And they say you can flip back and forth if you want to hear the regular programming or if you want to hear holiday music. I was like, okay, well, I'll try out the holiday music station. So I flipped over to that, and I was really taken by it because it was just such beautiful music. And really, they can call it a holiday station, but it really was a Christmas station because it was so much classical music, which was all rooted in the Christian tradition. And so it's very beautiful to be able to hear this music this time of year. And so I was very excited when I discovered this. Secondly, I was excited because yesterday I took all of my Christmas cards and mailed them at the post office. Now, I'm at a point where I send over 300 Christmas cards each year, and the very fact I got it all done before December, actually, was no short than a miracle. So God is good. But I was also reflecting upon what brought me to organizing my Christmas cards and putting it together. And of course, one thing you have to do is you have to go and buy stamps, right? And it was a few weeks back, I was back home on the East Coast, and I was home. I wasn't actually in New York, I was in Pennsylvania, in Allentown. And actually, I'm really happy because there's two folks here from Allentown today, two friends. And when I go home, I have little traditions I like to do. And one thing I like to do is, when it gets closer to the Christmas season, is I go to the main post office in downtown Allentown to buy my Christmas stamps. And it's like a nice little, you know, pilgrimage, if you will, going downtown and doing this whole thing. So I show up there and I'm like, you know, are the Christmas stamps here? And so they're like, yes, we have different ones you could select from. So they showed me the selections, and one was like a snowflake, one was like Santa Claus, and one was like something like a reindeer or something. I said, oh yeah, where's the religious ones? Like, oh, we don't have those. It's like, what? You don't have those? Like, nah, no, they don't really sell. People don't really buy those. I'm like, but let me check out back and see if they have some. So they went back. Lo and behold, no religious stamps. But, you know, every year there's a traditional image, usually of the Madonna and Child. Nowhere to be found. This is the main post office in downtown Allentown. Now, that may not mean much to you, but that's like, if you want to get anything post office related, that's where you would go. And the fact that they didn't have them, I was just perplexed by. So I went to another post office, and I walk in, and they had a poster of the Christmas stamp, the religious Christmas stamp. So I was like, okay, great, I'll buy them here. So I asked for the religious stamp, and they're like, well, how many do you need? I said, well, I need a lot. They're like, well, what's a lot? I said, well, like over 300. They're like, oh, well, I don't know if we have that many. I'm like, okay, well then I'll just take whatever you have. So I essentially clean them out of their stamps, of the religious stamps, And I was surprised because there was a younger person behind the desk. He wasn't serving me, but he says to the person who was serving me, "Oh, thank God you bought those stamps because we can take that stupid poster down. I absolutely hate this poster. I hate this stamp." And I was just so shaken by the whole thing because it was like, you know, regardless of what you think about the religious aspect of the holiday season, to say in front of the person who just bought 300 stamps that this is an ugly stamp and they can't wait to take the poster down just makes me think about, like, do we even have like a sense of like manners, right? Now, I'm not saying all this as a way to kind of get us all upset with the secularization of the holidays time, because clearly enough we can talk about that a lot. But what I am saying is that this time of Advent is a time where we have to really think about what are we individually doing to be a means of hope in what is often a hopeless world. Somehow, the impression of Christianity is not equated with being people of hope. Now, we know that from different places that we hear things. Christians are judgmental, they're too doctrinal, they're too narrow-minded, they're too whatever. Not often do we think that Christians in general are people of hope, people of peace, as reflected in the first reading, people of light, joy, as reflected in the second reading. That doesn't seem to be equated with the Christian mindset, or at least with the Christian interactions. Somehow, the whole notion of Christianity being a people of hope has now been mitigated to just being a people who are separate, somehow almost even mad at the world. Yet, as we continue to deal with the secularization of the holiday time, each one of us has a great opportunity not to complain about it and not to just kind of, you know, force to say Merry Christmas when people say Happy Holidays or things like that, but to genuinely look at what it means to be intentional and what it is that we are hoping for during this time of preparation for Christmas. You know, Advent is a very confusing season in lots of ways because, first off, we don't really know what we're supposed to be doing because we know that Jesus has already shown up, right, 2,000 years ago. So it's not as if we have to pretend that he didn't show up and then, voila, we're surprised on Christmas that he is here, right? So it's not just simply like we're kind of like not thinking that Jesus is actually alive in our midst today. And also, it's a confusing season because of the fact that as much as we're trying to not be too over Christmassy by trying to have this kind of more spirit of solitude, preparation, almost repentance, we realize that we are have to deal with the preparation of the Christmas time. We're going to have to write our Christmas cards. We're going to have to get the house ready and decorate it for Christmas. We're going to have to buy Christmas gifts. So we have to do things to get ready for Christmas. It's not as if we can pretend that on Christmas Day, then we start getting into the Christmas season. So it's a confusing season because it's hard for us to understand what are we as Christians supposed to be doing. We can't just pretend that Jesus isn't around, nor can we just somehow put off all of our Christmas preparation until Christmas Day. So how can we actually look at this season as a way to integrate what it means to actually do the physical preparations for Christmas, but with a spirit of intentional hope? You know, when I was saying to you about how excited I was that I found that classical music station that had Christmas music, it made me hopeful. In fact, it made me want to tell other people about that station. Go and listen to it. Who knows what the beauty of that music can do to transform hearts. When I was writing out my Christmas cards, it brought me hope. Because I don't know exactly what type of place people are going to be in when they receive that card and the message that's in the card. But maybe it might just be the right thing they need to hear when they need to hear it. I was just this morning even looking at some of the gifts I already purchased to give to godchildren of mine. And it brought me a certain type of hope. Because certain of these books, they're like children's books, really help young people to grow in their faith life. And that also makes me hopeful. Now, all three of these things are ways that I have to navigate in the day-to-day world, right? Writing Christmas cards, listening to Christmas music, buying Christmas gifts. But it is done with an idea that what it is that we are doing is meant to be given even as a gift in this time of preparation. You know, one of the great things I've learned about being here in California is that this entire state was essentially founded by Christian missionaries. We don't have to go far anywhere to realize the great impact Christianity has had in this part of the country. San Francisco, St. Francis of Assisi, right? And it's often questioned as to what made the missionaries effective in bringing Christianity to the natives of this part of the country. How were they able to do it? And often we somehow think that it was some type of massive indoctrination process. But when I visited the Carmel Mission, I was struck by one thing, that the Franciscan missionaries did not really have a set program as to how they were going to bring the good news of Jesus's love into the world. They may have had ideas of how to do it, but the most effective thing that left the most impressionable aspect or the most impressionable part upon the natives was that these Franciscan missionaries curated beauty. They would actually make gardens for no purpose other than to just rejoice in the beauty of flowers. Their buildings and structures allow themselves to not just be functional, but to be taken up into beauty. And this was extremely perplexing to the natives in this area of the country. Why would you spend your time just growing flowers that were just beautiful for the sake of being beautiful that would eventually just die anyway? Why would you build buildings that were not just simply about making sure that you had a roof over your head, but would somehow bring you into a different place of experience? Why do those things? And it was simply because the Franciscans understood that what they were doing was participating in the beauty of God. That this was not simply about them showing off anything other than giving reverence and worship to God in and through beauty, through what was capable of the human hands. And I think there's a great lesson for us to take from what our forefathers and sisters who brought Christianity to this land as to how we can live Advent. How can we be a people of hope that curates beauty around us? Because to be struck and to be delighted by something that is beautiful, that is truly beautiful, is something that you want to share. You don't want to keep it for yourself. You want to share it. And when we're doing all the things around our house, getting ready for Christmas this time, what are we doing for ourselves and feeling how we have to kind of somehow fit the mold? Or what are we doing as a way to kind of curate beauty and to bring it to those who lack beauty? I mentioned this story before. There was this nun back in Brooklyn, New York, whom I'm close with, who was sitting on a pastoral council at a parish. And it was a very, very poor parish. And the decision came up to how to deal with this large donation that they received. Were they going to use it in investing in fixing the church, which was in very bad repair? Or were they going to use it for social services in the neighborhood? And this sister, who I'm friends with, said, "People need food. People need clothing. People need ways to live better. We have to take this money and we have to be impactful in our local community." And clearly that's a reasonable position. But yet there was a woman on that same council who lived in the projects. And she said, "Sister, no. Use that money to beautify the church. Because each time when I go back to my apartment and I walk up the steps, there's vomit on the floor. There's usually a man passed out, laying on the ground. It's dark, it's dingy, it's smelly. When I come to church, I want to be able to experience that which I don't experience day to day. And all the money in the world is not going to fix all of these apartments and all these buildings, but you can use that money to make this place a means of hope, intentional hope, in a hopeless world." So perhaps this Advent, maybe reflect upon what it means to be Christians. We have a bad name out there. People think that we're all judgmental, that we're nitpicky, that we just are imposing on our doctrine, that we're mad because everything's being secularized too much. Yet, to be a person who is a follower of Jesus Christ is one who knows that that which is in this world that is broken is a means to be healed. And that can only bring us to one place, and that is of hope. As we come and approach this altar to receive hope, to receive Jesus, may we know that we are not alone. And may we also know that we never have to be hopeful on our own, but hopeful in and through the one that we receive. May we all be welcome to receive Jesus even more this Christmas season. May God bless you.